First Baptist Church of Redmond, June 10th, 2018. Know Jesus knows if we trust God.
This morning we'll be reading from Luke 21, verses 3 and verse 4. So he said, "Truly I say to you that this poor widow has put in more than all, for all those of their abundance have put in offerings for God, but she out of her poverty put in all the livelihood that she had." Thank you. You may be seated.
This is a picture of the coinage that would have been involved in our story today. It depends on how it's translated. The Greek word is lepta. We'll talk about what that means. But this is the front and the back side of the coin that would have been minted and available during Jesus' day that comes up in our story. When you look at things, you would do something different. I know I would do something different. So oftentimes if we're at home, what do you want to eat? And I like this. Okay, well, we'll have pasta then. I think there's a commercial that talks about that. But sometimes you just have to make a decision. Years ago when we would go out to lunch more often than we do now, I'd hop in the car, and I used to ask kids, what do you want to eat at? And people would say as many choices as there were people. And I knew that that was a mistake then. So do you remember what I started saying instead? We're going on a mystery trip. Because I knew where we were going to go, but I wasn't going to say it ahead of time. And I discovered that if we went someplace, I'm glad to be here. So I quit giving the opportunity for question, and I started thinking, I'm glad that we're doing X. And so that was a different perspective. Sometimes it's difficult for we as individuals to help or be generous with something that wasn't our idea or that we didn't plan or that we're not very involved with. I have a story of a man in church who, after the service was over, stopped the pastor and complained that the church had bought 5 new brooms, an expenditure he thought was completely unnecessary. The pastor was surprised at the man's reaction and began to talk about other people. Do you think this was excessive? Should we not have done that? And the pastor mentioned that to the church treasurer, who handles the bills and also handled the giving in their church. And the church treasurer responded, it's understandable. How would you feel if everything you gave in the past year was tied up in 5 brooms? Ba-dum-bum. Jesus, as he has finished addressing the previous groups. If you remember, Jesus has come, he cleansed the temple, and part of what he did when he cleansed the temple is most of the sellers, most of the people who were there with the racket to raise money, for the Pharisees, for the temple funds, to pay out a little bit extra for the Roman guards, because that citadel of Antonia is right next door. He threw them all out, and they were primarily in the outer courts, the court of the Gentiles, the court of women, because this is a large open area, and it constricted then the availability of those spots for people who wanted to come and worship. And remember we've said before, when I look at what other people have written, people knew this was a significant Passover season. People knew that Jesus was coming. They were wondering what he was going to do, what he was going to say. They were expecting something. So a larger than normal crowd, and some historians have said up to 2 million people could have been there for this week leading up to the Passover festival. So now that Jesus had cleared out this area, there were more regions around the outside of the temple, covered porticos, where people could come in, A, to worship, B, to be near the temple, and C, rabbis, teachers like Jesus would come in, sit down, and they would teach. And as Jesus had been sitting down to do this, people who did not like his presence, people who were very happy with the status quo, they didn't mind that the Romans were there as long as the Romans left them alone and let them do what they wanted to do, because change is uncomfortable, change is scary, and they were happy with the status quo. So they began to question Jesus, and Jesus began to respond to them in like manner. In our previous section at the end of the previous chapter, Jesus had said, "Beware the scribes who desire to go around in long robes, love greetings in the marketplaces, the best seats in the synagogues, the best places at feasts." And then Jesus went on to describe them as really, essentially, immoral men, devouring widows' houses, making pretense long prayers. These will receive the greater condemnation. In other words, God was watching. And Jesus saw and pointed this out to the crowd that was around him as he was speaking and put down the attack. Jesus is now about to make a point. 21st chapter. "He looked up and saw the rich putting their gifts into the treasury, and he saw a certain poor widow putting in two mites." Jesus is a busy, and like, you know, I have to admit, friends who were at the festival yesterday, I just sat at a table for about half the time. And I went home yesterday and took a nap because I was so tired for sitting at the table for so long. So I lay down for an hour for sitting at the table. So imagine Jesus speaking God's word, interacting with people. He has his own disciples. He's making sure that they're paying attention, that they're perhaps taking care of things in the crowd that were needed, dealing with his opponents in an appropriate, direct way. Everybody gets tired. There's times where Jesus recorded being tired, being hungry. So after doing his activities, there seems to have been a little break where Jesus finished after he was speaking. And so perhaps the crowd began to disperse. I don't think Jesus was doing any scroll signings, but I'm bummed. But Jesus would got up and probably just was sitting with his disciples. And along the sides of the temple, as we talk about on the inside, there were different rooms, different areas where things would take place. There seems to have been an area where money was stored temporarily until it got put farther away. But for people who wanted to give money, so Mrs. Ron, think about this if we did church offering this way. Suppose that instead of having one overall offering, and people can make a designated gift to something if they want to, you know, we have the tithing stuff online if they want to. Imagine if we had, as they seem to have, 13 offering boxes. So the offering boxes were for different things. And someone has drawn a representative image of what they could have been doing. And so there were some offering boxes, and it's the top is described in writings as looking like a trumpet. So you would have had a box or some kind of opening, and then you'll have something that looks like a big vase, or I think it was brass, so people describe it as a trumpet. And if you had money you wanted to give to this, you would drop offering in here, drop offering in here. So there were 13 different locations. No ATM machine, but 13 different locations where you can give to different things. And so you're doing this communally, but also, you know, everybody can watch you go up and go spot to spot. And so while sitting, the way this is written, it makes me think that Jesus is sitting, he's with his disciples and talking, and in the corner of his eye, he looked up. And perhaps since there was a break, quote-unquote, in the action, people are coming and making gifts, and he's noticing. He's watching what's going on. He sees people lined up at the different trumpet-shaped offering containers. And we think very possibly he's in the court of women right now, where everyone could have come in and sat and listened to him. Each one of these is, like I said, for designated giving. And as he looks up, number one, it's good that people are giving because that was part of their expectation. Their worship of God was not just prayer, but also financial giving to honor God, to support different things. People have written on the subject that if you were an active Jew of this era and a lot of social services were theoretically available at the temple, you might give as much as 25% of your annual income at the temple for sacrifices, for offerings, and for such and such. So that's kind of significant, 25%, in addition to whatever the Romans were trying to get out of you. Now, there's nothing wrong with coming to give funds. It should be doing this, right? You probably have noticed. If you look online, you'll see charitable giving by state. You could search on this on Google if you want to. There are different results. Some of the things are a little bit inconsistent. Washington State, where we live, is one of the higher, above average states for charitable giving by percentage. Part of that is there's some very large groups in this area that makes some significant gifts, and that's all totaled in there. Because they went off of, you can access parents from IRS records and see the charitable giving overall, not broken down by group or association, but just overall. So it's good that, you know, people are giving. But here, of course, is what Jesus notices. He saw a certain poor widow putting in two mites. Now, Jesus is different than us. We like to think we can read people's minds, yes? We like to think, I know why you're doing this, yes? So oftentimes we are dead wrong. Jesus, however, as a synagogue, oftentimes would look and be able to actually discern what was in someone's mind. Oftentimes the Pharisees and the Sadducees are coming to speak to him. The Bible remarked that he can look and know what was in their heart and their mind. So of all the people that are gathered there, Jesus is drawn to this woman who is coming to make an offering, we don't know into what fund. He saw her heart in a way that no one else could. And what stood out about her is he saw what she trusted most. So, he says, verse 3, to his disciples, this is who he's talking to, I believe. Truly, I say to you that this poor widow has put in more than all. What did she put in? Luke, the physician, uses precise language that not all the other gospels will use. He refers to her coin as a lepta. And she put in two lepta. What does that mean? Let's talk about what that means. So let's talk about coinage. We have pennies, nickels, quarters, 50-cent piece, dollar coins. Two lepta in this era made a quadrant. Four quadrants make one aserion. 16 aserions make one denarius, the value of a field worker for a day-long shift, which would be anywhere from 8 to 12 hours. Get a denarius, go out, work hard, pay cash. So in other words, a denarius is worth 128 lepta, 64 times as much as she gave. So it's hard to make this equivalent, but if you're going to go out and do manual labor for a day, what are you going to make? $50, $60? In that case, in relationship to somebody who might get like that much funds, and we're talking field work here, not necessarily a union job, so many dollars an hour. So if you made the comparison, she might have given, I don't know, like a dollar's worth of offering. I'm just guessing to make a comparison. This is the point Jesus is making. For all these, verse 4, by all these, he is particularly noting wealthy people that have come in, and if you have a brass-sounding scoop on an offering box, what will happen if you drop in a bucket load of pennies? Lots of noise. It's going to rain. Make it rain. You know, so, shh, rich person might have come in having servants with containers. Pour them in. Shh, so everybody hears, everybody knows. It's an audible sensation. Her two little coins, they might not have hit the brass on the way by. Jesus notes that what she did was so important. Mark 12:43 records this event also. He gathered his disciples, watch what's about to happen. Because again, he knows her heart. Watch what she's going to do. Jesus says the wealthy gave out of, this is very plain what he's saying, out of their abundance, they have put in offerings for God. So what he is saying is that from their abundance is he has X amount. Of that X amount, he's used this much for his household, for his servants, for his field workers. He's taken care of all of his bills. Also, he has taken care of anything he wants, his other investments. And so if you want to, he's spent X. And now, out of what is left over, he will scratch his head and think, what might I bring to God as an offering? So he doesn't view the entire picture. He says, I have this much that I have obligations for. I've decided that this is the way I want to live. And that money is mine. And the little bit that's left, I'll decide what I want to share for God's ministry. In other words, the rich weren't giving anything they would miss or notice. This is what Jesus is pointing out in his contrast. They were only giving out of their leftover money. After they had made their trip, after this and that, they would give out of the leftovers. And you can see this, so this is just the one illustration I'm giving. I talked about our state being good. This is a nationwide thing, an analysis of IRS data. You see that when you think of percentage-wise, who gives to charity in general, the poor always give the most. If you have an income of less than $25,000, you tend to give 16%. Well, this is IRS data. 25 to 50, 8.7%. 50,000 to 75, 5.7. 175 to 100, 3.6. The more you make, 100 to 200,000, and then 200,000 or more, actually, from 2006 to 2012, they gave less to charitable giving overall in the United States than they had done in the previous six-year study. Here's the point is that Jesus is making. He says, out of her poverty. The word for poverty has the idea of something that is not enough. So if you wanted a drink of water and you had a cup and you said, can you please fill this? And somebody began to pour into it and either they didn't have enough to fill your cup or your cup had a hole in it and you couldn't get the value of your whole drink. Ever done that? We've done that before. You get a coffee cup, sit down and you put it down. There's coffee on the table. I haven't even picked it up yet. There's a crack in my cup. So the idea is that she had a lack of things that she needed. Not just she was giving from her abundance, but she did not have enough. What she needed for completion is how you would understand that term for herself. Her needs that she would have as a widow, likely by herself, or probably not necessarily great, but she did not have all that she needed just for that. She wasn't saving anything out of her offering. It seems that, as Jesus says, she, out of her poverty, put in all the livelihood that she had. The word for livelihood is just the word for life in the language of our Bible. So what she did was she could have kept one, but this was everything she had to spend. This was her grocery money. This was her roof repair money. This was her butter and egg money, as they would say. My mom was old enough that she always would have a handkerchief in her purse, and she would keep several quarters tied up in a knot at the end. You ever seen that? A lot of her older friends, they would all do that. They had a little something, the ladies, and they had this little knot where they had some mad money tied up, and that was in case I was out with the bus or I needed a gallon of milk or something. They always kept that. They never let go of it. She could have kept one. She was not teasing anyone. Remember the early church? You had Barnabas sell everything and give it, and everybody appreciated it. And Ananias and Sapphira, they sold everything too. It would have been perfectly fine for them to keep some. It was okay for them to keep some, but they got in trouble because they lied because they wanted to look good. They wanted to be deceptive. And so they said, oh, this is everything. We didn't keep everything. As some denarius probably fell out of his pocket when he leaned over to drop his offering in. But no, she gave both. She gave all that she had. She didn't have any stocks or bonds. She gave all that she had for living. Why is that? This woman trusted God. Her husband had died. There's no reference to children around her. What we see is that she had gotten used to depending on God for what she had. And God had not failed her, yet she was still alive. She still had clothes and shoes. She could get around. She could get to the temple. And she appreciated deeply what God had done for her because she had nothing else to trust. There was no one there helping her, at least not at this occasion. She didn't have large estates bringing her something. That first, however she got her cash, that's all she had. And she was willing to give it because she trusted that God would not leave her. And again, livelihood, that's all she had to live on. She in spite of all the people that were there, she had total trust because she walked out without anything to rely on. She had total commitment. She put herself and her life in God's hands. This is the point. She didn't hold anything back. The contrast was with the rich. Our Lutheran commentator would like to look at R.C.H. Linsky writes on this, what makes so many gifts so small? The fear that the giver will not have enough for themselves. They depend on what they have, not on God who gave them even that and can give them much more. She didn't give after everything she wanted, knowing what God wanted to have her wishes. She gave first and trusted God for the rest. For us, why is this deed of note? It's because it was Christ-like. 2 Corinthians 8:9, for your sake, Paul talking about giving, for your sake he became poor so that you by his poverty might become rich. There's different ways of giving, by the way. If you have two flints and you hit them together, they make sparks. Spark might catch something on fire. If you have a lemon and you squeeze it, it's going to give out juice when it's squeezed. If you have flowers, rose, orange blossom, jasmine. I always remember, we have rosemary out here. Sometimes you'll smell that on a warm day in the afternoon. The rosemary smell comes in the house. Mint. There's a lot of things that grow that give off odor. They release fragrance of their own accord. Should not every person ask himself, to which of these groups do I belong? When I'm stressed, do I give out sparks? When I'm pushed, do I just give off an acidic response to the people who are with me? Or do I give off a pleasant sensation to the people who are around me, no matter how I find myself? I mentioned part of this once before. I wanted to mention it again because the contrast is so plain. I always enjoy reading testimonies from athletes. And somebody who, up until about a year ago, was somebody who was listed in the FCA, Fellowship of Christian Athletes list, was Aaron Rodgers. You know now that he has been taking a lot of time. And even though he has been in the past raised in an evangelical Christian household and has been somebody who's spoken about Christian causes before, not long after they won the Super Bowl in 2011, he began to reflect on his position and begin to question his faith. And in a big expose in ESPN last year, this is where I became aware of it, he told ESPN he no longer identifies with a religious organization and believes organized religion can have a mind-debilitating effect. That's a quote from him. A mind-debilitating effect because there is an exclusivity that can shut you out from being open to the world, to people, energy, and such and such. High round draft choice, very successful. You know his name. There's another guy who, when he was drafted from college, he was teased because if you're the last person drafted in the NFL draft, what do they call you? Do you remember? Mr. Irrelevant. And the year that Aaron Rodgers was drafted, Mr. Irrelevant was Ryan Succop, a field goal kicker. People, you know, gave him the title Mr. Irrelevant. He got some news, some testimonies, and wouldn't you know, he's kicked for a couple of football teams. And even though he was the last person chosen in that draft, he has been consistent. He is now, I think, ranked 20th all-time in the NFL field goal percentage. And lots of stats, you can look him up online. But he is different than the first person I spoke to you about because when he has a chance to be in media, he says things like this. Quote, every gift and ability I have obviously comes from God. He'll go on and say, yeah, kicking field goals can be a high-stress occupation. Quote, when you're performing before 75,000 fans out there and you mess up, everyone knows. He also says that he himself makes sure that before he plays, he has his devotions and he ends them with reading Philippians 4:6-8 before every game. And he says, when you see the other guys going up their stand, they line up and like this, he says, once he has his final position, He tries to recite those verses in his mind while he waits for the snap. Whatsoever is true, honest, just, that kind of thing. He says, quote, every time I read that and pray that, the Lord blesses me with peace and ability. God makes clear that he doesn't want us to be anxious. Every time we're anxious about something, we're not trusting him. So the contrast is, what's in your mind? What is in your heart? And how thankful are you for what God has done?